Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high-heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's badlandsranch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast about Marvel, the MCU, and right now, the finale of Agatha All Along. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
And yeah, we're going to be talking about the last two episodes of Agatha All Along, episode 8, Follow Me, My Friend, to Glory at the End, and episode 9, Maiden, Mother, Crone. If you haven't watched them, I'm sure you have. Everybody in the world has.
You have. You watched them. Think about it. You watched.
Just remember back a couple of days. You know what we're talking about.
I came down to a very spooky part of my house with floating candles and cobwebs.
Oh, I love
this. This very recording.
Yes, I've got some spooky.
I'm witched.
Funko bewitched. Funko Pops. I got some spooky
that
Funko Pops. There's Chucky. I got Chucky behind. So,
are the Funko Pops the ones that grow up from the bottom of the cave or down from the ceiling of the cave?
No. Funko Pops are from the bottom. Unko Pops are from the top.
That's it.
We'll workshop that. I always get it mixed up. We'll workshop that. So yeah, if you haven't seen it, definitely go watch it, because we're going to be talking all spoilers, speculation, theories, etc., about what went down here. But very brief overview of these episodes. The first episode, episode 8, we get the final trial after the reveal that Rio is death. Jen, Agatha, and Billy all go there. We get a couple of big things. Jen gets her power back. Billy seemingly resurrects Tommy into the body of a drowned teenager somewhere in America. And Agatha ultimately escapes from it, battles Rio, dies in the process, sacrifices herself for Billy, leading to the big twist at the end of the episode that it turns out the road was not real. We pick up in episode 9, not directly with that. We actually jump back to 1750 to find out a lot of information that we didn't know. Nicholas Scratch. We get to see young Nicholas Scratch, his birth, how Rio gave him and Agatha more time, how they developed the song Workshop the Road, Ballad of the Witches.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like a behind-the-scenes Beatles doc in the final episode.
It was weird that they were walking along with that whiteboard behind them the entire time, but it worked. It worked for me, honestly.
That's how you get the best stuff, is really workshop it.
So they came up with the Ballad of the Witches Road, and for years, Agatha has been killing covens of witches to steal their power. Nicholas Scratch ultimately dies at around age 6-ish. Rio takes him. And at that point, we find out that Agatha has been pulling a con for hundreds of years, gathering covens of witches, tricking them about the Witches Road, leading up to the point where Billy creates the Witches Road with hex magic, very similar to Wanda over in WandaVision. They walk the Witches Road, leading to a final confrontation between the two of them after it turns out Agatha is now ghost Agatha. He's not able to banish her. Instead, he creates a memorial to the witches who died on the fakeish witches' road in Agatha's basement, and the two of them head off together, hopefully to travel America solving mysteries week to week as Ghost Agatha and Wiccan. But I guess we'll see what happens. So there you go. That was
it. Feels that way. Yes,
yes, that was the broadest overview possible. Yes, I 100% would watch it. Absolutely. Let's talk broad overview first. Obviously, there's a lot to get into, a lot of discussion online. I'm sure we are bursting with thoughts. I certainly am. But I want to talk broad overview, as we always do at the end here. I know you've been pretty mixed on the show. I was curious to hear what you thought of these last two episodes, and particularly, I was thinking of you when the Billy twist happened with him creating the road, because I was like, oh, maybe that's why the escape rooms are stupid.
Yeah, I mean, I just off the top, I got to say, I thought these last two episodes were fantastic. Mm-hmm. I thought they just delivered on everything. It made sense. Some of the criticisms we had, and they actually sort of justified a lot of them. Like you're saying, like those rooms were weird and lame because they were an amalgam of random ideas taken from pop culture in Billy's subconscious, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it's. I just was the emotional core of the final episode, the reveals of the second to last episode. We got the best versions of a colored light witch fight, I think, here than we could have had. And it's set up very much more closely to sort of the Marvel comic book universe version of Agatha and Wiccan than I ever thought we were going to get.
Yeah, I love these two last two episodes as well. My big thing that I know we've been saying the past couple of episodes is people predicted that Billy had created the Witch's Road and that was the Hex. I don't think they knew that Agatha had developed the song with Nicholas Scratch or any of that stuff. But all of that, even knowing that going in, even knowing that theory, it kind of doesn't matter because they really hit these moments hard. Like, yeah. The direction is good. The acting is good. The writing is good. And that's one of the things I think people forget in terms of theory heads, something that I think we've been talking about for every week on this show, is you can make theories. But ultimately, if it's all about those twists and that's it and being like, ooh, we're going to get one over the audience, it doesn't work. What they did here and what they've been doing all along is driving it on the emotional core of the characters and making that number one. And shout out to showrunner Jack Schaefer and her whole team. Reading interviews with her, by the way, like as a little side note, has been great because all showrunners should do this. But she constantly, when somebody asks her a question, is like, yeah, I thought that moment was great. And very specifically, here's the writer who came up with it. And the director did this. And she's giving shout outs to her whole team and very clearly emphasizing that it was a team effort to make the show work as well as it did. And it really shows. Like, they kept Agatha at the forefront, all the other characters' emotional cores at the forefront, and then let the twists and everything serve those. And again, from reading interviews with her, it sounds like they went through a slew of iterations on all of this stuff before they ultimately hit on this. She was even like not 100% sure about, is this the way we should have gone with these things? But ultimately, obviously it was. And I think the show is better for it.
Yeah, this having seen the whole season, it really feels like they started at the end and worked backwards. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes much better television. And it's sort of not the way the Marvel TV or universe project has ever worked. Yep. They usually start at the beginning and sort of figure it out. And I think we have criticized that. I think everyone has sort of seen the holes with that method. And this feels like the flip, because I actually think this makes the first episode sort of the weakest and weirdest episode, because it's sort of just, it feels like the very front end of the thread that leads to this really amazing ball of yarn at the end. But the mayor of Easttown, this sort of like Wanda gesturing, all that feels so strange and far away and almost wispy, and sort of making Agatha feel goofy then. Definitely sets us up to show how heartbreaking her and villainous, though, at the same time. We have sympathy, but also are, like, revolted by what she does in this last episode.
I think that's fair, but I will throw out one other thing that I did not pick up on, and Jack Schaefer said in one of the interviews, is in the Mayor of Easttown credits, or Agnes of Westview credits,
yeah,
those images are all the witches that she kills in the last episode. So all the dead bodies are there. So there's definitely stuff that they're laying in throughout. All of the end credits, of course, are actually shots of Billy's bedroom. So I agree with you. I think it built really nicely, but that's what you should be doing. You should be starting small
100%.
At the beginning of the season and raising to that.
Yeah, I'm not saying that as a negative at all. I think in the old way of doing television, the pilot is sort of like the most bare episode. It's the most like, I don't know, he's in love with her, and like it's always like sort of the, we don't know what we're doing yet. And it just, something locked in about this series where it, to be reminded of that rhythm, it was so satisfying to enjoy the show this way.
Well, also, I will give sort of a circuitous example in terms of TV structure here that's really stuck with me from various interviews and over time. So on WandaVision, I think the biggest criticism of WandaVision was the finale, which was like witch blasting action. We're setting up multiple movies. All of the Marvel stuff that we felt like had been touched on but mostly avoided for many episodes, with this unique structure and delving into the emotional threads of the characters. In that last episode, I was like, oh, yeah, this is a Marvel show. You know, and we all like Marvel shows. We're obviously on a Marvel podcast here. But I think uniformly, when people talk about WandaVision, they're like, yeah, it was the best show in the MCU, except for the last episode. From interviewing Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa, the showrunner of Riverdale, many times, whenever we would talk about finales, he would always bring up one of the first lessons Greg Berlanti, who's like mega uber producer,
super producer,
told him right off with the first season, where he said, okay, if you have a plot heavy show, don't finish off your plot in the last episode. Finish off your plot in the second to last episode, because then you actually have time to deal with the emotional fallout for the characters and exploring that in the final episode. Because otherwise, what you need to do, if you finish off the plot in the final episode of the season, is you have like 5 minutes to be like, well, that just happened. Here's emotionally how we feel about it. Or alternately, you're shoving it to the next season, and then you have a dud of a season premiere because it's all dealing with stuff that happened in the previous season. So that's something that really stuck with Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa. And I think that's what they did here. Like, that was the criticism with WandaVision, is we got some good emotional beats. Don't get me wrong, in the finale of WandaVision, the whole putting to bed scene, Wanda dealing with everything at the end there and walking through Westview, very sad. But there was just like, it felt like a coda after Agatha and Wanda just sort of floating in the air and blasting each other there. Here, like you were saying, I think they threw it in the second to last episode. They have the witch battle with Wiccan, with Rio, with Agatha. But they swerve away from it by having Agatha ultimately solve the problem by kissing Rio, something that we wanted. We also felt the tension of that over the course of the show. Diffusing that tension, she dies, the end. And then they're able to get into this really beautiful 20-30 minute sequence where it's just Agatha and Nicholas Scratch in the finale that, like you're saying, drives everything home emotionally and lets us really sit in it. And same thing with the Billy and the Agatha thing, which that's the coda. That's the setting up whatever is next, dot, dot, dot. But you have the time there because you've already thrown in the big battle, the superhero stuff, etc.
Yeah, it's an interesting sort of way that now TV is sort of always made. Game of Thrones famously did this in every season, I feel like. But it just, it calms us as an audience to know like, yes, excellent. And then we get to be surprised a little bit, I think, by the emotional punch, especially here, a character in Wanda that was, you know, sort of sarcastic and difficult for most of the season, where it was hard to root for her, but it was hard to treat her as a villain as well, because you could see the cracks of emotionality there. And we know it's her show. But it was all earned. This, in the beginning of the second to last episode, I was like, why is Wanda still being like obnoxious? She's being like a 10-year-old kid. Or sorry, Agatha. Yeah. Why she's being obnoxious here. And like, it's just, it was strange, because I was like, if this is an act, I don't know where it's pointing to. And then we got it dropping, and we got to see the backstory. And it earns all of that sort of in-your-faceness that she was doing the whole time. And she was just off her game. She was improvising the entire series because she had no idea what was happening either, as we learned that Billy had created the road. And it was her first time walking it as well.
And I think she had I intuit that she had the suspicion there. Like, she says it, that she was sort of figuring out in the back of her head that maybe this was Billy Maximoff. There's little tells in terms of, oh, he's kind of like Scarlet Witch. He's kind of like Wanda. But she's also hoping that maybe he's Nicholas Scratch the entire time. I actually thought there was a slight possibility, and I guess we'll see if they ever continue with this in every fashion, that Agatha was tricking Billy into resurrecting Nicholas Scratch into that drowned boy's body instead of Tommy. But I don't know. I guess we'll see what happens.
Wow, later. that's a fucked up prank. If that's what's happening, that's going to be a dark
I don't think turn. So. I don't think so. I think Nicholas Scratch is dead. Nicholas Scratch is gone. I also liked how they tied everything together there. You know, they're very obvious about it, but the parallels between how Agatha is trying to hold on to Nicholas Scratch as long as possible. Billy is trying to hold on to Tommy as long as possible. And that ties into the other witches as well. Like, Lilia's thing is all about time and death. Alice's thing also is her mom is giving her more time by creating the protection spell. And something I was thinking about a little bit this morning before taping is there's a really neat parallel between, not parallel, but sort of thread of Agatha and Nicholas created Ballad of the Witch's Road. It's nothing. It doesn't mean anything other than it was a con job, right? So that she could murder witches. It doesn't have any power. Ultimately, Billy down the road creates it and actually crafts it and makes it a real thing. But Lorna Wu, Alice's mother, took Ballad of the Witch's Road, thought it would open the Witch's Road, but ultimately made it into something and made it a protective spell that worked for her daughter, Alice, in the way that Agatha could never protect Nicholas. So it became something real later on. So this is just to say that, like, there's a lot going on there and a lot of thought, I think, in all of these things. Certainly you can intuit a lot. They leave a lot of space for viewers to interpret things, particularly when it comes to Rio and Agatha's relationship and what happened.
Oh, yeah.
But I think I've seen a lot of fans grousing online, and I understand being like, how did Rio and Agatha meet? What happened to the intervening years? How'd they fall out? Why'd they break up, etc.? I think it's okay that we don't know that, because that would weigh down the show too much.
Well, I think I want to talk about that, but before we get to that, I love what you're saying about the Witch's Road, the song. And I think my takeaway from that is, like, once you create a lie, or once you do something as big as what Agatha did with this song and how she started killing people, you lose control of it. Once it's out in the world, your lie becomes different things to different people. And suddenly it is a protection spell. It's the opposite of its intention for Alice. And then it becomes reality when it encounters someone as powerful as Billy, and comes back to sort of bite Agatha in the ass. And so that was really cool, the power of just a big idea like that. And then about Rio, like, I understand those complaints, but I think the point of this show wasn't the relationship between Rio and Agatha. We just speculated that it was because of what the show was telling us early on. It was about how Rio is a force of nature, I think. Mm-hmm. I think she became that, especially in these last couple episodes. When we see that shot of her and it's she's half skull, I was like, oh, this isn't a person we're meant to understand the intricate way she fell in love. Mm-hmm. This is a much more powerful being that had a dalliance, like a Greek myth, like Zeus coming down to Earth in a Greek myth, and the repercussions to Agatha of doing that. And I thought that was really cool, a really great surprise.
Well, and I think you could read it however you want, right? Like, there's hundreds of years.
You have to read it my way.
Oh, just your way?
My lie's the right one.
I'll add that to the fan wiki.
Yeah.
It's on there. Just timeline-wise, I may have this a little wrong, but we saw in WandaVision and in the previously on, Agatha siphoning the power from her coven, her mother's coven, in 1693, right? So yeah. We see that. Then we see 1750, she's pregnant and giving birth in the woods. Then we cut ahead 6 years later to when Nicholas Scratch is 6 years old. We see a whole montage sequence. We don't know how long that takes. He's ultimately taken. And then we're hundreds of years past that. We just get the montage of her slaughtering witches over time.
In different sick outfits the whole time.
Great outfits.
Really love the 80s.
Oh, that sequence was so good, by the way.
So good.
That was fantastic. And the transition that clearly, like, they filmed it the same way to match up with the way that they filmed the thing in the second episode, seeing it with the coven. Awesome. Chills over my body. But my point in there is, you can fill in that information however you want. You know, I've seen people call out that, like, the reason Nicholas Scratch wasn't scared when he saw Rio on the bridge with the green flame torch is because she came and visited him every night.
Oh, that's cool.
Maybe, you know, that's possible. Like, if you want to read it that way, there's also, apparently they at least talked about in the writer room, whether Rio was the father, but ultimately decided they would spend too much time on Rio and Agatha rather than getting to the Nicholas Scratch thing, which is the purpose of the episode. So again, if you want Rio to be the father there, you can read into that. Maybe there'll be a project that fills it in later in, but
yeah,
my point there is that, like, it's whatever you want it to be, but the show, as Rio is introduced, is they are exes and they are leading to a confrontation. That's what we get in the first episode. And I thought in the second to last episode, in that fight, all the dialogue really dug into that very nicely, being like, I don't want to ever see you again. Leave me alone. But ultimately, there's still an attraction and a love there, and there's a history there that they can't let go. And that's what comes out when Agatha finally kisses Rio, is she feels for her, but she can't be with her because of what happened with Nicholas Scratch. Any of the other things would have probably distracted from that. Would they have added more information? For sure. But this was a much more direct way of doing it, I thought.
Yeah. And I think at the end of the day, it's like, we just want enough information to feel good about the story and set up all of the emotional moments that we get in that, in those, these two episodes. And I think they did an excellent job of, it's a delicate balance to find that just right amount of info. And I thought they nailed it.
Yeah. I want to call out one thing that didn't quite work for me, though I like the execution anyway, and that was the reveal that Agatha had bound Jennifer. We find this out halfway through episode 8. They're in the trial. Time is ticking down. Jennifer can't use her power, and she happens to mention she was in Boston in 1920, and Agatha's like, oh, were you there too? And that's enough to tell Jennifer that, oh, you were the person that created the spell for the doctor who bound me and took away my power. The moment immediately after that, where she takes the hair and wraps it around Agatha's wrist and gets her power back, Sashir Zamata, fantastic job there. Really beautiful. I've seen a lot of people interpreting it as a African-American woman telling a white woman, you don't have power over me. I am the one in control. You have taken away my narrative, which apparently was not the intention of the scene for the writer's perspective, but they like that people are reading that into it anyway. I also loved seeing her crawl her way out of the ground from Westview and fly off after that. Very fun. Both of those moments, really beautiful emotional moments.
Just real quick there, Sashir posted some behind the scenes of her doing that. Sashir, someone that I knew back at UCB, directed her house team for a few years. And it's really cool to see her in the rig just like floating up. Sorry.
It's like you taught her to fly and now she's finally getting her wings.
That's a lot of the stuff we worked on at UCB's Mod Night. Is getting in and out of rigs.
Low ceilings in that place, too, so hard to fly very far.
Yeah.
Anyway, great moments, but I understand why they did it, because it is Agatha all along, and we've already seen her messing up things throughout history. But it felt like a weird twist to be like, oh, you were the one that bound me. That was too much of a logical leap, in my opinion. Do you...
Well, and if you're backloading, it feels like another example of, like, they were literally writing in this backwards, like a lot of great witches spells, shouts to Zatanna in the DC universe. The idea of the unbinding moment and of with Jen having her power back right at this moment and escaping from the witch's road was awesome. Like, very cool, amazing spell moment, the repetition, all that. There's something primal about that that just pulls you in. I feel like they were like, that's a cool moment. How do we get there? Oh, just have them have bumped into each other at this time. Because it felt very like, quick, let's say something so we can get to the cool part. And it's, yeah, you can tell there's, you can always spot those weak moments in shows like this where it's like, oh, they didn't quite, it's a little thin there. But I think I see why they did it. And I have forgiveness. When you close your season out this strongly, my forgiveness level shoots way up.
I'm not upset about it or anything. It
you're
was
mad.
Just one moment.
I can see you.
I'm livid. I'm screaming, pissed, mad. If you're not watching the video version, I am red. I have.
Yeah, there are three broken TVs behind Alex because he smashed them over the course of our conversation.
And I got to go buy a fourth TV so I can watch the episode again, get mad, and then smash that TV. Yeah.
That's how fans live.
Expensive week for me. What else? Why don't we sort of walk through some of the moments in the episode? I thought it was a really nice moment to start episode 8 with Alice's dead body, just to drive home, Rio is death. This is real. These people aren't coming back. And I strongly speculated that we were going to get everybody back. That we didn't. That we didn't. I thought that was good.
I agree. I thought this moment just set the table from the melancholy we were going to feel over these next two episodes, setting Rio up as, like, not the – even though we get a great cackling witch moment, she's not a cackling villainous character. She's someone who is like, no, my job is to take your dead body and see you later. I love the line, you're a protection witch. You died protecting someone. I thought that was cool. Sort of a friendly death. Mm-hmm. In a lot of ways as a spirit. But it's funny how much in the tank we were for, like, they're all going to come back together. It's about giving a covenless witch a coven. And this show, very unlike Marvel, I thought, gave us the dark, twisted fantasy version of that.
Well, and I appreciated that. I mean, this is not to jump out to, like, the big picture again after saying, hey, let's walk through the individual moments. Yeah. But where you have a character like Thanos, for example, who, big villain of the first cycle of Marvel movies and TV shows, who eliminates half the universe, and there's still a discussion about, like, well, I don't know, he was kind of right about the whole resource thing, I think. This show, very specifically, is like, I know you love Agatha because you love Catherine Hahn, and she's awesome. She has spent centuries murder, like, she is a murdering maniac. She is maybe one of the biggest murderers of all time.
Power craven, only for personal power.
Well, I think there's some room for interpretation there, right? In terms of, like, for the 6 years that she's with Nikki, I do think there's a little bit of, like, I have to have the power to protect him. I have to have the power to stay alive past the point when he's alive. But it's clear that she's been doing that beforehand. She continues to do it after. She continues to do it during. And she loves it. She is a bad person.
Yeah.
Flat out. So I appreciate that they did that. And we still like her because she's a really good villain. Ultimately, she ends up in this ghost mentor position. But I do hope they don't forget going forward, whoever picks up this ball, if they ever do, that she's bad. She's not like, level bad. She's actually evil.
I have some predictions when we get to that later on.
Okay.
But yes, she's full Obi-Wan at the end of this.
One moment I did want to call out while I'm starting to look through my notes here that I thought was absolutely fantastic was Rio leaving and cutting open the backdrop.
Same. The practical effect there, so good. That's the kind of thing that shows, say they want to do, everyone's like, I love practical effects, but nobody actually does it. And this show, just the sound of the knife cutting through that, it's better. It's always better when you can feel like they just did it in the moment. And it gave me confidence that they weren't going to just have a CGI laser fight at the end. And they didn't.
A couple of the reasons why I thought that worked so well at that moment is, one, They did build a ton of stuff on this show, but you're looking at it and you're like, oh, there's a backdrop in the back. You know, like, oh, yeah. This is clearly a fake forest that they built on a soundstage. That was like, yes, we know. We know that's what you're thinking, and we're leaning into that. But then it also pays out very nicely in terms of Billy crafted the road. This is all his hacks, being like, nope, this is all a play. This is a stage play that is being put on for one person who is Billy Maximoff, and you don't know it yet, but me, Rio, I know it, and I'm leaving. I'm leaving this play and exiting out the back.
Yeah, I don't give it. This is just a little game for me. I have other stuff. Because I love the implication is also Rio leaves because she has to go, like, kill other people or take other dead bodies or whatever.
This is a general thing. I never get death in fiction where it's like, I don't know. Like, she's spending a lot of time being like, come on, Alice, you got to go. And the entire time I'm thinking hundreds of thousands of other people are dying at the same time.
Hundreds of thousands? Alex, what's happening?
I don't know. My numbers might be like a little off.
Yeah.
How many people die per minute?
They say it in the show, I think.
4 or 5 million, something like that.
No, I think you remember it. Not everyone is in a Godzilla movie at the moment.
In the Marvel, they are.
For this is not Avengers Endgame always. Yeah, do you think death is ever like, oof, I wish I was in regular Earth instead of this 616 shit or whatever.
Yeah. I like the final trial. I thought visually that was neat.
Very cool.
Yeah, the grill light.
Jumping back a little bit, I love the line, the son of the Scarlet Witch stole the second life. That was cool. And we get right after the opening thing, we get this scene that reminded me so much of the Dagobah scene when it's Yoda, Obi-Wan, and Luke, and he's like, how does the world work? And they're both like, well, here's how it works. And that we get them literally standing on a very similar environment, being like, well, here's some ways that the world works. To get us into the flow of the rest of the episode. It just had such Dagobah energy to me.
The shoes thing, jumping back, actually was very nice as well, coming around to the shoes, putting on the shoes. The show has been relatively and openly obsessed with Wizard of Oz, so bring that at the end of the road to put on the ruby slippers and go home, I thought was very nicely done. One thing that I wanted to mention about the trial with Agatha that I thought was interesting is jumping ahead to episode 9, she very clearly lays out her powers for Nicholas Scratch. And she's like, she doesn't say, I can only destroy, I can't create, but that's the underpinning of what she's doing. She's like, I can manipulate things with my mind, I can move things, I can blast things, but I'm not looking at the line right now, but like, she can't heal, she can't create. She can't see the future. I think she lays out what the other folks of the Coven can do. She can't do that. But she does create. With Nikki, with the dandelion seed there, she actually makes something grow and crafts something for the first time. And I think what I took away from that is there is growth in Agatha, literally and figuratively, that she has, despite everything that she's done for centuries, due to these covetless riches, grown and felt something for the first time in a really long time.
And Billy, I think. Mm-hmm. I think that there's definitely some connection points there. And I think also in that moment, I was like, oh, she's reckoning with what she's done and what she's lost and what the consequences of that for the general witch population on Earth, which just seems very quite devastated by Agatha. If she's like, yeah, in Boston, I killed some people. Sick. You were there? Oh, cool. Is very, very sad and sweet, I thought, that moment. And still, we didn't know the story, but we felt the feeling, which I thought was cool. Two other things there. Don't steal her struggle was just a cool throwaway line. Also, sometimes boys die. Really, like, like hitting a tuning fork. Just resonated so hard with all of these characters.
Yeah. What do you think about bringing back Tommy in this way? You know, we don't obviously get to see him because they haven't cast him yet, but we do get to see this drowning scene. I thought that was a nice way of showing it without actually having to show the actor, and it is pretty harrowing, but what's your take on it?
I liked it because for two reasons. One, it sort of just says, don't worry, we're doing the thing. Mm-hmm. It's coming. It's going to be cool. Here's the sad part. But more importantly, like, it was designed to be scary and to light up Billy, which mm-hmm. is the point for right now, is to make Billy feel guilty, but also hopeful, but also needs it, but also can't get it. Like, it just created him, like, between five different forces, trapped. And I think that was a great spot to put him, to set up the revelation that, like, oh, my God, I was powerful enough to maybe kill a kid for my brother, and I'm also powerful enough to create an entire little pocket universe here.
Yeah, I like that as well. I was trying to game out a little bit in my head in the week leading up to this. Are they going to have a Tommy reveal like we talked about, I believe, on the last podcast? And, you know, there was no way where I felt like it would be satisfying. There was a theory that maybe Evan Peters' Ralph Boner would end up being Tommy. And that's something that's funny and fun and certainly winks to him playing Quicksilver in the X-Men movies and pretending to be Pietro in WandaVision. But that's a funny end credits moment. It's not like an emotionally poignant moment necessarily. And it's also weird to be like, you're a 10-year-old boy and now you're in Evan Peters' body. A little bit weird.
That don't make sense.
The other option is bringing in somebody being like, hello, I'm Tommy, which is very similar to the Scar reveal in She-Hulk, where this weird CGI'd kid, I think it's Will Duisner or something like that, walks up and he has that weird haircut and everything. And you're like, well, who is this? What's going on? I haven't followed this the entire show. This has been happening off screen. And I know that was part of the joke there. But again, doing that on this show with some random actor walking, being like, I'm Tommy, I'm Speed. Now I'm involved in the final battle with Rio, is just not satisfying. So I think this.
Well, and I can't imagine the tonal switch to be like, hey, let's remember we're doing superhero stuff with this, because mm-hmm. that's not what this is.
Yeah.
This does set up Young Avengers, and we'll probably talk about that later, but it's not, it shouldn't be concerned with doing that.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Totally agree. I thought it worked as well. Oh, I want to throw out, before I forget, one 100% not true, definitely not going to happen theory, but this got stuck in my head, is finding out that Billy can resurrect people through himself and through Tommy. There's a wild outside possibility, again, never going to happen, that it could lead to Marvel zombies in the MCU. Because I was specifically thinking, like, if he tried to bring back Wanda and put her in her dead body, that potentially creates a zombie, right? So, I don't know.
Okay.
Just something they could do.
You're pitching for a Marvel zombies feature film, live action.
I guess. Or it's something that, if we are... we're going to jump ahead at some point and talk about Young Avengers, but they could do that as a threat for Young Avengers. That would be weird and horrifying. But
I will say, I think this show makes me think that in an eventual Young Avengers movie, Wiccan will somehow be the problem. Like, he's the hero, but he's also the problem that they have to figure out, because he's so powerful that he's going to do something like you're saying, or hypothetically with Agatha advising him. I think that makes me think he's a driver there.
Yeah, I don't think Ghost Agatha is going to give him good advice, honestly. But I do like the idea of Catherine Hahn as a ghost just hanging out with the Young Avengers and, like, bopping around the place. That's fun.
Well, I mean, the predictions I mentioned earlier, I think it could go two paths, two very clear paths. I think she could be the villain of the Young Avengers movie, and that could be like a late reveal in the movie that she was pulling some strings that we don't know about. Or I think she's going to pop up every like 15 minutes and have just a good joke.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's going to be somewhere in between where she's like on the team. Right. I think she's going to be popping up with a zinger or Agatha all along at the end.
Yeah, and I think I've seen a lot of people being like, I would rather not have her as a ghost long term. I want Catherine Hahn back in the flesh. And there's options there. It's like, hey, I powered up my brooch, so now I'm in physical form most of the time, so we don't have to do the ghost effect. Whatever, that's fine. But the opposite end of the spectrum is like, what's more fun?
Definitely her as a ghost. Exactly. I love it. I think it's so – and like – again, like the comics, Act of the Harkness is a ghost. That's the way it is.
Yeah.
And she pops up to be like, to scold people. And like the fact that they linked it up with the comic book universe, when I was like, they have left that so far behind, I thought was genius. Mm-hmm. And I love her as an annoying, problematic presence haunting the Marvel MCU.
Her delivery of the line, yeah, now I'm a ghost. Can you dig it? So funny.
Maybe. Yeah.
And I think also, that's the tone you need to go for going forward.
And it's a much better tone. Her, just mean sarcasm through a lot of this series, I was like, I don't like this anymore. I'm ready to move past it. And the show does. Her being, sort of a wound up nasty, who's, roasting everyone, I like that.
Yeah.
That's going to be fun.
All right, jumping back to episode 8, though, as we're kind of working through here, I did like the battle. I thought it was really well filmed. You mentioned Rio on the roof, another very clear Wizard of Oz
witch
house
mode.
Thing, 100% very fun.
Shouts to Aubrey Plaza enjoying both sides, the melancholy death spirit here, but also just being a cackling psychopath on the roof. I thought was awesome.
It was great. I really like the Wiccan reveal. I thought his costume, him floating down, giving him the superhero moment, was very fun as well.
It's always a little weird in a show like this when it's like, look, I'm a superhero now. And I'm like, you didn't need to do that. Aren't you upset about everything that's happening? And you went and did a outfit change?
Yeah.
Okay. Strong choice. But I agree. It was cool. It felt like right out of the comic. But one thing in this moment, the whole when she calls you a coward, hit the deck. Which was set up like as a momentous, that's the moment.
Yeah.
I was like, Joe, she just missed getting hit with a sink? the kitchen sink, technically? Yeah. I was like, oh, that wouldn't have killed her. It would have maybe hurt.
Right.
Very strange thing.
Yeah, I think that was another thing, the Jennifer Bowden thing, where it felt like they needed moments in that final battle where Agatha was using the magic she learned from the other witches of the coven. So how do you iterate that with Lilia? It has to be with a prediction somehow. And I agree with you. It was just all right, that's fine, I guess. But I like the rest of the stuff. I liked her using the protection magic and using – she made or tried to make a potion magic thing as well. So, again, it shows that I know I said before she's evil, and she is. The redemption arc she gets here is a 5% redemption arc where she's kind of learned little things, which is so much more realistic, even in the middle of a witch battle, to life than I have learned a big lesson and now I'm an entirely different person at the end of this movie. That doesn't happen. We learn things by inches, not by miles.
Well, I appreciate that, but I would argue that she didn't really learn anything. I think we learned about her and were able to understand her more. But we thought the fact that we thought she was going to bring the coven together, or even here using what she learned to fight, I was like, oh, none of that happened. In fact, I think she's like, yeah, I killed those witches because that's what I do, and so I did the right thing. I think we only learned that she was used to doing what she did. Mm-hmm. Not that she somehow was moving forward as a person. I think she just lands in a different place rather in a plot way rather than emotionally changes.
I'm going to disagree with you a little bit because I do think she learns things there. I do agree that she doesn't feel bad about them dying. You know, that's fine. That's what needed to happen. She had that whole speech to Billy about you're a witch, you survive. That's what you do. That's her whole point of view. She said it out loud. But I do think at the same time that her turning around and saving Billy, even though there's a bit of manipulation on Billy's part going on there that he learned from Agatha.
Yeah.
And she's also looking to make right what she did wrong with the one person or one of two people she cared about, which is Nicholas Scratch, by saving Billy. She does ultimately give up. She gives up her life. She goes to Rhea. She accepts death to save Billy, even though, again, this is why I'm saying 5 to 10%. She hangs on to life anyway by being a ghost, by not leaving. But then there's also that moment to bounce back and forth and keep wavering where she has a very human moment of I don't want to die because I can't face it. I can't face it with Scratch. I can't do that. So,
well, and that's why I feel like I don't think she was learning anything from the coven. I think Billy taught her. Mm-hmm. I think she was able to see Billy sort of becoming a witch, coming into his powers, and it gave her some context on her and what happened with her and Nick Scratch.
Yeah.
And I think, because she is, I will say, you're right, she is different at the end of the season, but I think it's because of what she learned from Billy and not at all any of the other witches. Witches are just like, yum, yum, they're like chicken wings to her. She's just trying to take them down.
Yeah. I can see that. I think that's fair. And I mean, on the opposite of the spectrum, Billy also learns from her, probably to his detriment, because she's like, it's fine. You killed people. Don't worry about it. No big deal. They died along the way. They wanted to die. They loved it. And
yeah, they thanked you.
Yeah, they were like, cool. And then he puts the little tribute in her basement and that nobody will ever go to, and they're good to go.
How about the Deborah Jo Rupp Sharon erasure in this episode, these two episodes? Man, yeah. The just roasting her, the gardening one, I think calls.
I did her like her point. Finally remembering who she is at the end.
Yeah.
Agatha remembering her. That was a fun capper on that particular runner. What else? Oh, I loved. Well, oh, go ahead.
I was going to say jumping into the ninth episode.
Oh, before we do, real quick, I wanted to say on the eighth episode, I loved bringing back the Westview residents and just flashing them being like, oh, God, is this happening?
Here we go again.
Great. Just really great bringing them in there. And also nice parallel towards the end of that episode. I think it was actually the same shot as Wanda walking through Westview after everything happened and everybody looking at her, with Billy walking back to his car in Westview. They actually paralleled that really nicely, which I thought was pretty neat.
Yeah, that was cool. I agree.
One last thing about episode 8 is in the closing credits, there's always been this shot of a trick-or-treater with a witch mask. At the end of episode 8, the witch mask is off because everything is finally revealed, which I thought was pretty neat.
Very subtle.
Very subtle, but very fun. All right, jumping into episode 9, what were you going to say?
Episode 9, I just love the hard turn we took here at the beginning, and it just, like, it pulled me in so hard to be like, oh, here we're going to get the backstory just told directly. Mm-hmm. Love that. And then we get the sort of deal. We don't find out about Rio and Agatha. We just know that something happened and that death feels pity for Agatha and gives her time. Like, you were made from scratch. Is the implication there that this was an immaculate birth, that she created this child?
That's what I took away. Again, I think this is up to interpretation. If you want to think Rio is the father, great. If you want to think some random dude is the father, great. But
I want. I love random dudes.
I hope he shows up. I hope it's Ralph Boner's ancestor is the father.
Hey, man, it's crazy.
Jebediah Boner.
We just eat bread, basically. Sick, right?
I also took that away, the you I made from scratch. This is the one thing that Agatha created up until the plant that she plants out of the dandelion seed towards the end. But I certainly took that away there. I think that makes a lot of sense to me. I think also, you know, while I'm fanficking the hell out of this, I like to think that Rio and Agatha lived together for years and wanted to have a baby, and ultimately through magic, she was able to create Nicholas Scratch, goes into the woods to have the baby, and ultimately feels betrayed by Rio because of what happens. That's me filling in the blanks, but that's my interpretation.
I like that. And I also think it makes sense why she has the power to create, maybe, mm-hmm. but has always chosen destruction because it satisfies her more. And then she chose to create Nick, and it led to just the most devastating feelings of her life. So she then doubled down on choosing destruction. Makes a lot of sense.
Quick side question, though. You've had two kids. I've had two kids. Did your wife bite a lemon during labor? Because that's what we do. Yeah.
Just a nice way to a nice little pick you up. You know,
when I always am like, here's a lemon. Here's half a lemon. And my wife, who is by a tree giving birth, bites down on it and it makes it.
A lot of times I'll just take when my wife's asleep, I'll just take a half lemon and just squirt it right in her face. Just to a reminder of those times.
You're really a good husband.
Yeah, well, I love memories, and I love getting to it, you know?
And we've talked about this a little bit, but I thought this whole section with Nicholas Scratch was great. I loved all the cons they were pulling. I thought that was great. Loved Catherine Hahn in this, you know, little moments like coming on the first coven, telling them that they're hungry and they haven't eaten, and she's putting on a sad act, and you can't really tell. You're like, oh, maybe they really are hungry and have been wandering through the woods for a while. But that look she gives as soon as she steps to the protection circle, where Catherine Hahn just changes to this evil, vile grin. Awesome.
Yeah.
I'll also mention, apparently, I couldn't tell whether they just wrote or filmed a bunch of this other stuff. Apparently, they had plans for all of the lyrics in Ballad of the Witch's Road, but then ultimately ended up cutting a lot of them because they felt like you don't need to explain everything. But one of the ones that I saw Jack Schaefer call out is like, I'm forgetting the exact lyric, but like it's the open up the door one. Was in the scene where Nikki's like, I'm hungry. She sends him off to slaughter a goat. He slaughters the goat, and then they roast the goat, and she's like, and open up the gate. And that's him opening up his mouth to eat the goat. Mm. I was like, oh, yeah.
The goat gate. You didn't that's what that. I call my mouth, is the old goat gate. Gotta go put a taco in the old goat gate. You know what I'm talking about.
But again, I thought this whole sequence was really well done. Clearly, Nicholas Scratch being like a very similar moral anchor to Billy, which is to say not a great one, I thought was well done.
Well, yeah. And I also think it's he doesn't want to live this life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know if that's why he just is like, all right, I'll go with death. But like you can tell he's like sort of soul sick, I think, over the course of it and doesn't love the situation. Mm-hmm. And I think that doubles, I keep calling her Wanda, Agatha's guilt in the situation when death does come.
One neat little detail is when he steals something to lure the witches into Agatha's cabin, what he steals is the bell that she uses to hit, to make the little tone to get when they're singing Ballad of the Witch's Road throughout history. So I thought that was kind of neat because that's something that, like, even with this vile evil of murdering witches throughout the centuries, she's still holding on to a reminder of her son the entire time.
Yeah.
Literally.
Literally. When death does come, like, that shot with the green torch, I was like, this is straight out of a Mike Mignola Hellboy comic.
Just 100%.
Plucked. I was like, that's so cool. And then when she wakes up and he's gone, I was like, I can't believe how dark, how upsetting this is.
Yeah. Well, also, the moment right before that where he starts running to Rio and she points at Agatha and he's like, oh, right, yes. And gives his mother two kisses on the cheek. So sad.
So upsetting.
I've seen some people interpret that as like, again, that's why she came to him every night. It was like, don't forget to kiss your mother on the cheek. Give her a kiss. I don't know if that's true, but like there's a familiarity there that certainly seems to imply it. So somewhere in those 6 years, I think Rio showed up again.
Yeah, I think that whether or not that's written down anywhere, I think that's a cool interpretation of what's happening.
Yeah. And then we get into the end of the episode, which a lot of that to me is coda and just sort of setting up and figuring out what's going to happen with Billy and Agatha next. Yeah, I thought the ghost Agatha was great. The look of her being the classic gray hair from the comics, though she doesn't have that weird swoopy updo that I think think of the John Byrne art. She'll get it.
Yeah, I'm happy. I'm fine not seeing
that. In Deadpool and Agatha, I'm sure we'll get the comic book accurate look of her hair at some point. But the costume is like, it's a amalgamation of the on-screen stuff she was wearing, the classic Agatha Harkness brooch thing that she has in the comics, as well as the newer costume. Like, the thing that I thought was very funny, it has nothing to do with the show, but just from like an outside perspective, is Agatha Harkness, old lady witch, often a ghost, like we've been saying in the comics, right? Like, on and off, she's been a ghost advising and taking care of like the Fantastic Four's kids, Scarlet Witch and Vision's kids. She's been involved in all the storylines, the riffing, all that stuff. But then as soon as Catherine Hahn was Agatha in WandaVision, they immediately, in a very complicated way, made Agatha Harkness younger so that she kind of looked like Catherine Hahn, but not really, but at least was like a younger version of her and had a new silver and purple costume. Now, Agatha on screen, Catherine Hahn, is old gray hair Agatha, but they also gave her a costume that has like the silver and purple like the comics. So I wonder if they're going to make Agatha older again in the comics.
Age her up again. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah.
I like that the brooch is sort of like a Doctor Strange style Eye of Agamotto. Like it's her power shooter, probably.
Yeah.
But that's a cool. That's a cool idea. There's at least an emotional undertone to it.
There's an emotional undertone, but also it certainly looked like when she grabs the brooch, her hand becomes a little solid. So like I was saying earlier, they could do a thing where it's like, yes, that keeps me anchored to reality, et cetera, yeah. et cetera. We'll see.
I really liked how when we flash back to episode 2, I think, when the road opens. I love the way she's so shocked. And also like... we should have known a little bit because of the blue power that's there. It's all blue.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there was definitely some clues there that we, I guess, didn't know to look for.
Well, I will say, we talked about the fact that, like, she probably didn't expect the road in some fashion because she just wants them to blast her with the blast you bitches line for the second episode and then seem surprised. But, yeah, we didn't figure it all out. There was one other thing. I don't know. Go ahead.
I just like the way that flashback, and we did get to see some Sharon Davis just like loving the song, which was funny.
I remember what I was going to say. There was that one thing, I think it was in the third episode when they ask her, or fourth episode, when they ask her about walking the witch's road, and she's like, how many witches did you leave with? And she just puts up a finger saying one. Clearly, she is referring to Nicholas Scratch at that moment because they were the only two witches to walk the witch's road. So that was a nice little...
the windy road.
The windy road, yes. All the stuff with the ghost at the end was very fun. I liked all the things that Billy goes through, all the emotions he goes through, first trying to banish her and then ultimately doing the tribute, sealing the road... one door closes and another opens. We get this moment at the end. Something opens in the basement. Presumably it's the cellar door. I don't know. And then they say, let's go find Tommy. And that's where we end with no end credit sequence. So unless there's any other things from the episodes, why don't we move to the vision board section? I know we've done some predictions, but where do you think this is going next?
Well, one thing I was happy that they didn't go, I know we speculated a lot, we're going to get Wanda waking up. At somewhere in watching these two episodes, I was like, oh, please don't do that. That would undercut a lot of what we've seen. So I was actually, I feel like a lot of people maybe wished there was end credits. I was very happy with the way this ended. I didn't want more. I didn't want a little cute tease because I think they did such a good job bringing it to a close. I mean, we're set up for Young Avengers here.
Yeah.
I feel like we do want to see Wiccan meet Tommy. I don't know in what we would see that. That feels a little strange to do that at the beginning of a Young Avengers movie because that's not what that story's about. So I don't know in what capacity we can get a little like 20-minute scene of them reuniting and finding each other again.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what we know is next, just to kind of lay it out there. First of all, anything's possible, but I don't think we're going to get Agatha all along season 2. I just don't think that's going to happen. You know, that has nothing to do with viewership or ratings or anything like that. It's mostly that Agatha all along was WandaVision season 2. So they're going to continue that story, but I don't think they're going to continue it directly out of here. We do have Vision or Vision Quest or whatever they're calling that show is coming next year. They're going to be filming it and it's supposed to come out in 2026. I don't think that's a place where we'd see Agatha and Billy searching for Tommy because that feels like you got White Vision in that, played by Paul Bettany. James Spader is coming back as some form of Ultron. We have Todd Stashwick is going to be a bounty hunter tracking down Vision. And that comes from Terry Matalas, who was showrunner on Picard season 3 and co-showrunner on season 2. He also did the excellent 12 Monkeys on Sci-Fi and other things. And according to Jack Schaefer, there was no talk about a handoff from this show to the other one. So I kind of feel like maybe they'll dovetail together eventually, but I don't think we're going to see this feed directly into that.
feels like a different show.
Yeah.
Feels like a tech, high action, chase kind of a thing as opposed to what we got here.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with that. We could also get like another riff on the Vision series by Tom King, potentially, even though they used a lot of that from WandaVision. I guess we'll see. The other one I've seen people speculate about is, we know the Wonder Man series is going to premiere December 2025. Despite Wonder Man having a very tight tie to Scarlet Witch and Vision in the comics, I think we're not going to see that connected at all.
Again, it feels like a different show tonally. That one feels more like almost like a procedural, maybe mm-hmm. Maybe a little funnier. Like, I guess we'll see. Nothing makes total sense. It doesn't mean that we won't see that scene there. Yeah. Depending on if everything is funneling to Young Avengers or somewhere else.
I mean, this is probably the worst case scenario plot-wise, but I think probably exactly what's going to happen. Given the schedule and everything that is going on with Marvel, you know, they have a bunch of TV shows that are coming out next year. We obviously don't know exactly what's going to go into production other than Vision, but they've also got Avengers Doomsday. They've got Spider-Man 4. They've got Secret Wars. Maybe they're going to do Blade in there somewhere, but probably not. But there's a lot of different balls in the air and a lot of things going on before they sort of wrap up this story that they're telling, you know, the cycle of movies. Because of that, I feel like the most likely possibility is if it's Young Avengers or if they show up more likely in like Doomsday or Secret Wars, I think Tommy is already there. Like, I think they're already a de facto team. There's a bunch of young kids. Miss Marvel is there. Ironheart is there. Catherine Newton's stature, or whatever they had called her in Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, is there. I think they skip all of that stuff, unfortunately, and just like end up
wild.
In the same place. I don't know.
It's wild. The careful construction of the Avengers team in the first phase is like the idea that these characters that we barely know, that mm-hmm. don't know each other, are going to be like, we're a team. It's like, what? How did you all meet?
Right. All in the same place, and Miss Marvel is like, we're all young, let's be a team, I was recruiting people, this cuts out a lot of the middlemen. I don't know.
Yes, true. I guess I would want a little bit more than that, but again, I don't know what it would be in.
Yeah.
I don't know what
place. They have a lot of mystery movies on the schedule, which, you know, for anybody who doesn't know, these are mostly Disney reserving places on the calendar. They're not actually like, we know this is a Young Avengers movie so much as hopefully we'll make a deadline and have a movie there. If not, it's going to be something else. We'll see, which is exactly what happened with Blade. Blade obviously wasn't going to make the November date next year, so they subbed in a Predator movie instead. That's exactly what happened with all those dates. I would love the next thing to be a Young Avengers movie. I would love for it to start with the search for Tommy and pick up directly. But also thinking about, like, that is potentially a whole plot for a TV series or an episode or something like that. So if you end up in a movie, that's 5 minutes at the beginning of the movie, you know, which is a little bit of a bummer potentially.
Well, I guess we'll see. Maybe it's the middle piece of Marvel Zombies feature film that you pitched earlier, where like 7 million people die every 30 seconds or whatever.
Make it happen, Marvel. Make mine Marvel. Any other final thoughts here before we start to wrap up Agatha, potentially for good?
Really enjoyed it. What a great, great conclusion. One of my favorite things that Marvel has done, especially lately.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think this joins WandaVision as a high mark of Marvel television. I'm very happy about it. I'm really happy about the series. I had a really good time talking about this. We have a lot more to come.
Yeah.
As they reveal, they dropped a teaser, weirdly, at the beginning of the first episode, but then also at the beginning of the last episode, I believe, teasing the next year and change of Marvel TV. So we got What If Season 3 is coming up. That's the final season. We've got Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. Next year, we got Daredevil. We've got Other things that Ironheart is finally coming out. Wonder Man, a whole year plus coming out from here. We're also getting Eyes of Wakanda, the Marvel Zombies animated series. Very different from the feature film, of course. That's definitely going to happen. Lots more coming up that we're going to be talking about on Marvel Vision is my point, and we hope to see you there. And if you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night to Facebook and YouTube. That's what I was trying to say. Please come out. We would love to talk with you about Marvel stuff. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter /X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, stay marvelous.
I almost accidentally confessed that we get our power by killing other podcasters and sucking their life into us, but thank God I didn't say it on mic.